everybody. What we're doing today, and it's a bit unusual, yesterday I gave lecture three of my Human Action Part One course, but there were complaints by a number of people that the sound quality of the first two lectures wasn't that good. So what we're doing is I'm going to repeat lecture one and lecture two on my new computer, which I think has better sound equipment. So if you are satisfied with what you heard in lectures one and lecture two, there's no need to listen to this. But if you didn't hear lecture one or two, or you tried to listen to this video or audio and you didn't like what you heard, other than of course not liking what I was saying, if you just didn't like the vocal quality, you might want to listen to this. Now, in the first lecture, I want to first explain, as you might expect, what we're going to be doing in the course. The basic idea is that many people want to read Human Action because it's the greatest treatise by the masterwork of the greatest Austrian economist of the 20th century. So a lot of people want to read Human Action, but then when they try to do that, they get into trouble because they start, as you naturally would, with the first part of the book, part one, and they find it's very difficult to understand it. It discusses a lot of philosophical issues that many people aren't that familiar with. They find it tough, so then they just say, well, it'd be nice to read Human Action, but it's just not for me. I can't follow what Mises is saying. I think this is a shame because the book really is a great book. And what I'm going to try to do in this course is guide you through this first part. And if I'm right, we'll see that it isn't all that hard to understand. There are some parts of the covering that do require some concentrated attention on your part. But what I'm aiming to show in this course is that with the help of these lectures, you'll be able to get through part one very easily, at least if not very easily, maybe that's going too far, at least more easily than you would have thought. I should say, for those of you who want to take the course for credit, I give every week a quiz that has 10 multiple choice questions. I don't make these questions very difficult. I'm just giving these sort of a good way you can find out did you understand some of the main themes of the chapter and the lecture that we're talking about. But you'll find if you listen to the lecture and read the material, you shouldn't have any difficulty in passing the quiz. And remember, these quizzes are strictly voluntary. You're under no obligation to take them. And the way the course is structured, each session lasts an hour and a half. And what I do is I give a lecture for about an hour, and then the rest of the time is for discussion and questions. We have about a half hour for discussion and questions. Now, in the introduction to Human Action, which is what we're going to be talking about today, Mises makes a surprising claim, at least I was surprised when I first read it, that he says that economics is the newest science. Now, what is surprising about that? It seems like it's not right. Aren't there a lot? Economics isn't an old science. Now, of course, if you follow Murray Rothbard, that economics began with the Spanish scholastics in the Renaissance, it's a little older than most people think. But if, even if you say, as many economic historians do, that economics began in the 18th century with Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, it's still, there were sciences that developed after that. Like, what about neurobiology or astrophysics? We didn't have neurobiology or astrophysics in the 18th century. So even if you accept a quite late date for when economics began, how could Mises say that economics is the newest science? Now, what Mises has an answer to that, if you want to say, one of the problems is, it seems like there are sciences that are newer than economics, so how can you say economics is the newest science, is that what newer sciences, like the ones I just mentioned, are just developments of already existing sciences. They use the same method of investigation. They're just going into more details about certain features of the subject. For example, neurobiology, they're studying the brain in more detail than it's done in conventional biology. Astrophysics is combining astronomy and physics, but they're just using the method, a characteristic method of the physical sciences. But economics, according to Mises, has a new method. It's using a different method from the ones that are used in the physical sciences. So one of Mises' major contributions in Part 1 of Human Actions explain what this new method is. I think one of the principal tasks of the book is to try to explain how economics arrives at knowledge using a different method from that of the physical sciences. So we can see from what I've said that issues and methods are extremely important for me. I suppose someone said, faced with all the difficulties of the first part, why don't we just skip part one? Of course, I hope they don't do that because that would put me out of business. I wouldn't be able to give a course on part one if most people didn't want to read part one. I suppose someone said, well, let's go to the more economic theory, which comes out later in the book, why we have to bother with all these complicated methodological issues. If someone said that, he really wouldn't be true to the spirit of Human Action. For me, it's extremely important to show that economics follows a unique method, and he was very anxious to explain what that method is. One point that Mises, or I shouldn't say a point, but a feature of Human Action that you'll find constantly in Mises is that he develops his views in opposition to other views. So he's always concerned with views that are different and in his view wrong. So he's developing his view in one, is a fancy word, in dialectical opposition to certain other views. So one view with regard to the wrong approach, supposing you said that, well, your study economics is the study of human beings in history, and there's a pattern that explains the whole of history. History has a certain goal or a direction. probably most famous view of that kind is Marxism, which says that history is developing in certain stages. We start off with primitive communism and the ancient world. There was slavery. This was succeeded by feudalism in the Middle Ages. Now we're in the capitalist period, and this will be replaced by socialism, which is the final stage. So Marxism isn't the only such system, but Mises says this is not the right approach if you're studying what human beings are doing. You shouldn't think that history as a whole has a certain goal or direction, because if you take this view, it's saying there's some kind of collective entity, such as history or the nation, that has goals. So he said, well, there's a pattern by which all of history develops, or then you'd be saying, but you'd be taking history as if it's some entity that has a goal of moving in a certain direction. But a fundamental principle of praxeology, which is the science of human action, the subject of the book, that's why he calls the book Human Action. That's what he says in praxeology, his name for one of these sciences of human action, namely the one discussing the general features of action. So this fundamental principle is methodological individualism. Okay, so suppose somebody said, well, why do we have to bother with these complicated issues of method? Why don't we get straight to the economics? Let's skip the first 140 pages of Human Action, get right into the Austrian economics that comes in the later part. I hope people don't say that, because then that would put me out of business. Nobody's going to read part one of Human Action, and I'm not going to be able to give a course on it. But the thing to realize more seriously, if someone were to take this view and say, well, I don't have to concentrate on methodology, that would be contrary to the spirit of Human Action, because Mises places great emphasis on explaining what this distinctive method is that he believes is characteristic of economics. So this is really integral to Human Action. We can't just put it aside. Now, Mises, throughout Human Action, characteristic of his work generally, he develops his own views in opposition to other approaches he can consider as wrong. You could say, if you want to use a fancy word, kind of a dialectical process. He's always concerned with something else that he wants to attack. In one view, which would affect a different view of the study of human action from one he thinks is correct, is to say that history as a whole has a certain goal or direction. So besides studying individual people and what their decisions and actions, would be saying there's some kind of pattern that makes sense of history as a whole. Marxism is the most famous example of that view. According to the Marxist theory, history develops in a series of stages, beginning with primitive communism, and then going on from there to slavery in the ancient world and feudalism in the Middle Ages. We're now in the capitalist period, and this will ultimately be replaced by the final stage, which is socialism. So what Mises says is wrong with this view is that you'll be taking history to be have the collective entity that would be active, would have goals just like people do. So the other views would kind of say nations have goals or can act. And according to Mises, one of the most basic principles that he follows is called methodological individualism. he goes in for sometimes he's rather tongue-twisting phrases, methodological individual. It isn't a good slogan for a basketball team, probably, but very important. It means only individuals act. So if you take the view that there's some kind of origin or goal of history going completely contrary to Mises' approach. Now, supposing Mises is right that he says, well, economics has this great new method of is one that can, by which you can attain knowledge in a different way from that used in the physical sciences. Why don't people recognize this? Why don't, say, if you study conventional philosophy of science, you won't usually find discussions of economics that are emphasizing this distinctive method of economics, giving us this new knowledge that Mises is talking about. And why is that? Well, Mises said, there are a number of obstacles to accepting economics. People reject this economics and the idea that we have some new way of coming up with knowledge because they don't like the conclusions that economics comes up with. And one reason they don't like that is many people take the view that what happens in society is completely up to us. You'll find this, say, in contemporary political philosophy, which is an area I'm very interested in. A lot of philosophers will say, well, the present state of the world is unsatisfactory. Say, we have a lot of inequality in the world, and it's really desirable that people be equal in their wealth or income, at least if not completely, at least more closer to equality than they are now. They have all sorts of criticisms of the existing state of things based on their moral views of what's appropriate. So what are these philosophers very often failing to grasp? They think, well, it's really up to people just to decide what kind of economic system they want according to whatever principles of justice or fairness they think are the right ones. But economics makes this difficult. Economics says it's not up to you to decide this, how society is going to be. You can certainly organize society in a certain way, but it's going to have consequences, and those consequences aren't ones that you choose. If, suppose you say, for example, that you want everyone to earn the same income, this all might have strong effects on incentives, and you'll find productivity will go down drastically. Or if you say society should be organized centrally, everything should be planned, suppose you just had a moral view, people should just plan things together. Economics shows that this couldn't be achieved. You can't have central planning and have a complex economy. It's one of the reasons they function to show it or not. We're not now concerned with exactly how he showed that, but the point is that economics, the conclusion of economics, impose limits on what people can do. So a lot of people think, I call this moralism, that society, the way society is organized, should be completely up to us. But it, in fact, isn't. There are limits to what we can do. And because economics teaches there's these limits, many people will just dismiss economics altogether. For example, in another case, many people don't like the idea that minimum wage laws cause unemployment. Economics teaches this example, you raise the price of something so there's greater quantity of supply at that price, and there is demand, then there'll be a surplus. So if you say, what have minimum wage of everybody would get $100 an hour, there'll be a lot of people who want to work at $100 an hour, but not that many who want to hire those. Many people aren't worth that much. So there'll be a lot of unemployment. So people who favor these measures don't like the idea that they're limited in what they can do. So that's one source of opposition to economic theory. Now, there are some people who are more sophisticated than that. They don't reject economics altogether. They don't say, well, the economic theory is just delusional. It's really up to us to decide how society should be organized. So what they say instead is that economics applies only to the money-making aspects. That should be aspects rather than asking. Otherwise, asking, I can't be proofing that on the work. So what these critics say is that economic theory is true as far as it goes, but it only covers part of life. It deals with what's called homo economicus, economic man. So what these critics would say is, well, when you come up with your conclusion in economics, you can't just say, here's what economics says, so that's true. It's just part of what we need to consider in studying human beings. It just gives us part of the truth. So Mises says that in the 19th century, economics didn't have the resources to counter this, which I call the modified rejection view. So this view is saying we shouldn't reject economic theory altogether. We shouldn't say, we shouldn't adopt this position I call moralism, which says how society is organized completely up to us, depending on the moral, philosophical, theological principles we hold. So this view says, sure, economists are right, there are laws of economics, but they just apply to part of our actions, namely the part that's governed by economic motives. That part of our life is governed by desire to make money, but we have all we want to do other things as well besides make money. We have all sorts of other goals in economics that covering that. So Mises said, well, the 19th century economists couldn't really reply to that because they had a theory of value where they would say, suppose I say, what is the value? I'm looking at a computer. What is the value of that computer? Well, according to the 19th century, that would depend on what the cost of production of the computer was, how much did it cost to make it. So if you take a cost of production theory of value, then you just said, you can't deal with all the choices that people make, because in cost reduction you're concerned with money costs of things. So you're not covering all of human action, you're just covering the money costs. So if you take the view people are trying to minimize money costs, this goes along with saying they're trying to maximize the amount of money they get. So this fits right in with this modified rejection. It says economics is just concerned with part of life, and the part is concerned with making money, homo economicus. So if you adopt the cost of production theory, which people did in the 19th century, economists did, then they weren't able to counter the objection that economics deals with only one aspect of life. Now, in order to have an answer to the subject, in order to say, no, economics isn't just dealing with the one aspect in life, namely the money-making aspect. It's not confined to homo economicus. It's dealing with all of human action. we need to have a theory of values that explains all choice, and means that only a subjective theory of value can do is only to say value group depends not on an objective factor like how much it costs to produce the good, but it depends ultimately on people's subjective assessments or preferences for things. So we can only answer this objection if we have a subjective theory of value. And in turn, now this is the complicated steps. The next step is, if we want to have a subjective theory of value, we need to use the proper method. Jesus said, unless you use the proper method, you won't be able to get the subjective theory of value. If you don't do that, you won't be able to show why economics applies to all of action, not just to homo economicus, who's concerned just with maximizing the amount of money he gets. So I think this is one reason that methodological issues are so important, because you won't be able to develop the proper theory of value without using the proper method, Mises thinks. And if you don't have the proper theory of value, then you can't answer this view that economics is just partial, it's just really almost economic. Also, you need this proper method to understand economic calculations, understand how people say are choosing sometimes between making money and other values, of putting everything on a scale of preferences, deciding should I take a job where I really don't like the job, but I'm going to earn a whole lot of money? Or okay, so supposing then sometimes we're faced with choices like this: should I take a job that where I'm earning a whole lot of money, or I don't really like the work, or should I take some other job that has less money but I really like doing that? So we have to be considering those alternatives, and we put them all on one scale. And in order to do that, in order to understand this method of preference scale, then we need to understand the proper method of studying economics. So again, really making really the same point before, we need to have the proper method in order to understand a subjective theory of value. Now, Mises, just a point of term, Mises likes sometimes these unusual terms. He said he's dealing with a general science of human action that he calls praxeology. It isn't the only science of human action, it's also history, but there's a general science of human action we call praxeology. And then within that, there's a branch called catalactics, which is the study of exchange. And this is part of praxeology. I think that that term catalactics was used by the 19th century economist Richard Wakeley. So Mises likes these kind of fancy terms, sometimes praxeology, catalactic. There are all sorts of things that he uses, the methodological singulars and methodological individuals, the serviceability and instinct, the nondescript character of economics. We can go through a whole list of the supererogatory features he likes. Rather unusual vocabulary at times. Now, what we've been dealing with so far is one type of opposition to economics. So first we said there are people who just reject economics altogether. They said, let's forget about economics. It's completely up to us how we organize society. I call this view moralism. then we said, well, there's a partial rejection which said economics just deals with this one aspect of human behavior, namely how we make money, homo economics. It doesn't apply to all life. So now we want to get another source of opposition to economics. Is attacking Mises' economic because remember, he's saying economics is following a distinctive method, and we haven't talked about the method is yet, but it's different. Remember, it's a new method, different from that used in the physical sciences. So you can see how there'd be one type of opposition just based on that statement. It would say economics shouldn't use a different method from the physical sciences. It has to use the same method. And if Mises' praxeology doesn't use the same method as the physical sciences do, then it's condemned as unscientific. So Mises said, well, this isn't really a good way of proceeding. You shouldn't have some kind of preconceived idea of method and say, unless you do things this way, you're not scientific. So economics is not on the appropriate scientific path, and it's not doing what they do in physical sciences. One example, which is what Mises discusses in another book called Ultimate Foundation of Economic Science, he mentions that the philosopher of science, Karl Popper, gave as a test or criteria for scientific statements that they have to be falsifiable. So, as we'll see later in the course, the statement, the theorems of praxeology couldn't pass that test. You can't falsify the claim that in action we choose our highest value goal. You couldn't come up with a counter instance to that because it's the statement that the tautology is true just from the terms. Someone would say, well, economics doesn't come up with falsifiable statements, therefore it's not scientific. So what you're doing there is you're just saying, you come up with your view of what science is and say economics doesn't qualify. But Mises said, no, that's not the right way to do it. What you should do is say, look, we get knowledge through economics, so our view of what's appropriate to science should respect the facts, and one of these facts is that we get knowledge from economics. We shouldn't just say, okay, here's how you do it in science. If you don't do it this way, it's not scientific. Now, there's another group that Mises is very concerned with. It was very influential when he was writing in his career, especially in the early 20th century, say going through the 1940s, it's not as popular now as it was when Mises was writing Human Action. But there's another source of opposition to praxeology, and this is what Mises calls here the Prussian historical school, sometimes more usually called the German historical school. So what people in this historical school included the Gustav Schmaler, Adolf Wagner, Werner Sombart, what these people said was there are no general laws of economics. Economists can't come up with general laws that are universally valid. You couldn't do that until you collected a large number of historical facts. So what the historical school said, well, it's premature at the stage that we're in now to get laws of economics. We should really just do historical work and study the economies of various countries. For example, a Schmaler was did a great deal of historical work on mercantilist economy, especially in German states. It's a great authority on that. So one reason, one motive that the historical school took this view that we can't come up with general laws of economics is they supported state intervention in the economy. They thought that we shouldn't have a free market, but the central government should really regulate the economy, develop certain industries, and do other things. So economic theory tends to show that these projects that they had wouldn't work, so that was one motive that they opposed economic theory. Now there's a more extreme expression of this view, which I call Darcy. Darcy would be, we can't come up with general laws of economics. This more extreme view is called polylogism. Again, we would like these rather unusual terms. So this is the view that all knowledge, not just economics, is relative to race or class. So a historicist on economics might say, well, there's separate, say, the mercantilist economics is different from, say, the late capitalist economics. The same laws don't apply. We could at most have laws that govern various historical periods. But polylogists would say that all knowledge is relative to race or class. For example, Marx would say that knowledge is relative to economic class, and not use thought that knowledge is relative to race. Again, Mises says, and points to the question of motive, that the motive, or a very, not necessarily the only motive, but a very important motive for polylogism is opposition to the conclusion that economics says your certain measures, that the intervention with the free market will have consequences. Most people don't like those consequences. So rather than say, okay, well, these measures won't have bad consequences, so let's forget about that. They say, let's forget about this alleged science that's telling us these measures will have bad consequences. And Mises points out in this connection that although polylogism is supposed to extend to the physical sciences, they do not seem to forget how there was a German physics. There was one Nobel Prize winner, Dortmund, who published a good book that was on German physics, and they rejected Einstein's Jewish physics. Now, although we sometimes find people who said that, in practice, everybody tends to accept the results of the physical sciences, so we don't have separate Nazi or communist ways of building a tank or doing experiments in chemistry. They don't usually in practice say the results of physical science are only relative to truth. This is just a fancy, more general doctrine, polylogism, as a way of combating economics, because we don't like the conclusion. Now, the question comes up, how should an economist, someone who says there are general laws of human action, respond to attacks on the possibility of economic knowledge? And one attitude would be, the economist should just develop his views just on his own. He shouldn't say, I have to respond to all these people who are attacking economics. He should just ignore them. Just they develop whatever he considers correct view. And Mises quotes, as an expression of this view, a beautiful sentence from Spinoza, which is, just as light is the measure of darkness, so is truth the measure of itself. Also, this essentially says, you get the truth right, then you really don't have to worry about all these false doctrines. One thing I should say is, again, you'll find at various places Mises quotes Spinoza, and I think he was influenced by Spinoza more than has been generally realized. I suggest this is a topic that merits a lot of further research, is the influence that Spinoza has on Mises. from either set of laws, he starts to know the rage. He doesn't accept this application to know the view. He says, on the contrary, it's essential that economists reply to criticism, and this is what he tried to do in developing his own methodological views. As I say, he's very often, as we've seen already, in response to the Prussian historical school, positive philosophy, say that economics has to follow metaphysical science. He's very concerned with what people say who oppose his method he considers correct. Now, another attack on economics that he mentioned is, you'll see this, I saw influential philosophy blog run by Brian Leider, who's a professor of law and philosophy at the University of Chicago. And he said, well, economics really isn't the science. If you look at the physical sciences, you can see they've really achieved something, they've really done something, but economics hasn't made much progress. I mean, look, in physics, we can get people to the moon, we can have all these great projects, but economists don't really know how to get us out of the depression. There's a lot of things about economists that don't really understand, so it's not kind of a very backward science. It neither replies to that this view, again, reflects this falsehood we've already covered, that economics has to be governed by the standards and methods of other sciences. A related criticism is that economics has not been able to bring about prosperity for everybody. Recession is controversy we're out of the recession, but certainly there are people not doing that well. So claim as well, if economics is a great science, why isn't everybody rich? So if you know so much, why isn't everybody rich? And in reply, Mises says, well, first of all, economists can't help it if people ignore their advice on policy measures. For example, almost all economists think that protective tariffs are a bad idea in the sense that they will reduce prosperity. So if a particular nation puts in protective tariffs, then they doesn't do as well as it would without them. And it isn't really sure to say, well, look, these economists don't really know much because society isn't doing that well. You can't say that if you ignore what the economists are saying. It's just something like saying medicine doesn't help much because someone had a particular disease and the doctor couldn't cure them, and it turns out the person just didn't take whatever the medicine that the doctor prescribed. That wouldn't be referring to proceeding. And Mises also points out that the free market, which came about in part through the ideas of Thomas, had a great effect in raising living standards of the Industrial Revolution. So even taking this objection on its own terms, criticism, economics hasn't been able to bring about prosperity for everybody, so it isn't really that good. Just accepting it on its own terms, economics has had some very significant results in increasing prosperity and it's enabled people to understand the benefits of the market. Now, this will be the last point I'll cover in this lecture. I've been talking very loosely about economics recommends certain measures or says that certain measures will have a bad effect. But what I said isn't strictly correct because economics is a descriptive, not a normative science. What I mean by this, well, economics is telling you the way the world is, just like, say, in here, economics, like physical sciences, say, in astronomy has various theories on how the universe develops since the Big Bang. it isn't saying that it's a good or bad thing the universe developed in this way. It's just saying, here's the way things are. We do have normative disciplines like ethics, and here's how things should be, but economics is a descriptive kind of thing. Here's the way prices are formed. Here's how economic production takes place. It isn't telling you what you should do, it just saying, here's the way certain phenomena in the world work. However, well, if that's right, why would I say things like economic, almost all economists say that protective tariffs are bad? Isn't that saying, telling you what to do? Isn't saying, well, you shouldn't have protective tariffs? Well, here's a bit tricky, and I noticed some people missed this on my first quiz. What the economist is doing when he's making these statements seem like they're learning, like saying protective tariffs will hurt prosperity, that isn't telling you what to do, it's just saying it will have certain consequences. So when I say, if you take certain liquid, you'll be poisoned, you'll die, that isn't telling you what you should do, it's just saying, if you take this liquid, you'll be poisoned and you'll die. It's a descriptive statement telling you what the consequences are of your doing that. So in a similar way, an economist can tell you without still being purely descriptive, certain policy measures will have certain conclusions. So it isn't making normative statements. The kind of tricky point is that practically everybody will hold certain value judgments. They just like give our example, you say something like, say I'm about to drink this, I think this is water, I drink it. Most of them said to me, no, that isn't water you drink, it's really arsenic. So we say, if I drink that, I'll die. Now, for almost everybody, that would be a good reason not to drink the substance if I think it's poison. But it isn't a value judgment if I say, this drink will poison me, just as everybody or practically everybody holds certain value judgments. So what appear to be normative statements are really descriptive statements, but they're ones that are, that they become, you can convert them into normative statements if you plug in values that nearly everybody holds. So it's extremely important, though, that economics is a descriptive, not a normative science. Okay, well, I think that'll bring to an end lecture one. So thanks for everybody for attending. Hope to see you for lecture two. Okay, Danny, are you still there?